Penguin Random House Audio presents Dark Mirror, Edward Snowden and the American Surveillance State. This is the author, Barton Gellman. For my children, Abigail, Micah, Lily, and Benjamin. Preface. Me, how did you do it? How did you extract all that information and cross a border with it? Snowden. It's just a question of being smarter than the adversary. Me, which in this case is only the NSA. Snowden. Ha, true. One step at a time and you climb up the mountain. You can tell that story later. Author's Chat with Edward Snowden, June 9, 2013. This book takes up the gauntlet that Edward Snowden threw down for me that day, the same day he unmasked himself to the world. Shortly after this exchange, he fled his Hong Kong hotel room ahead of an extradition request from the United States. His parting words were a challenge, not a promise. He did not intend to hand me his story, not all of it. I have built this narrative by my own lights and reporting. Dark Mirror is not a book about Snowden, or not only that. It is a tour of the surveillance state that rose up after September 11, 2001, when the U.S. government came to believe it could not spy on enemies without turning its gaze on Americans as well. New methods of electronic surveillance impinged on the digital commons used by just about everyone, encompassing us all in a pool of potential threats. It followed, from this way of thinking, that the public must not be permitted to know what the government was doing in its name. Surveillance and secrecy grew together, side by side. As intelligence agencies threw off old restraints, they positioned themselves as if behind one-way mirrors. On their side, the glass was transparent. We appeared in plain view. On our side, opaque, the watchers went unseen. The title of Dark Mirror alludes to that design, which takes literal form at the National Security Agency on Fort George G. Meade, Maryland. Reflective panels of blue-black glass wrap the 11-story headquarters in an electromagnetic cage, safeguarding the secrets of the watchers within. It was Snowden who gave us the means to watch them back. In a spectacular act of transgression, he exposed the machinery of a global surveillance leviathan. Snowden made it possible to document the origins of the Golden Age of SIGINT, or Signals Intelligence, as the NSA described the times in its strategy documents. Great swaths of human interaction had shifted to the digital realm. The NSA built the wherewithal to gather information in bulk, without discriminance, from the main arteries of global communications networks. It is too simple to describe what the NSA did as mass surveillance, a concept I explore carefully in this book, but there is no doubt that the agency began to sweep bystanders into its nets by the hundreds of millions. The traditional distinction between foreign and domestic espionage, a foundation of American privacy law, began to erode. Even after years of spirited public debate, touched off by the Snowden disclosures, U.S. law and society have yet to adapt fundamentally to what he revealed. There is another narrative here, more personal, that I did not expect to write. It is the story of my own journey as one of three journalists on the receiving end of the most consequential public leak in the history of U.S. intelligence. Against all inclination and training as a teller of other people's tales, I came to believe I should answer questions that I had sidestepped for years. Why did Snowden choose me? What made me think I could trust him? How did we communicate under the nose of U.S. counterintelligence authorities? Where did we meet in Moscow? Why did my name appear in an NSA file that predated the Snowden leak? Did the government try to stop my stories? How did I decide which secrets to publish and which to hold back? Who the hell elected me to decide? No one in my profession had ever possessed tens of thousands of contemporary code word classified documents. There was no playbook for a journalist under that kind of avalanche. Foreign intelligence services tried to hack my accounts and devices. The NSA director, I learned, was calling for a raid to seize my notes and files. Some of the Snowden documents, I believed, should never see the light of day. Others offered leads that I did not know how to follow without endangering my sources. To make matters worse, I had no journalistic home when Snowden appeared in my inbox. I had left the Washington Post 3 years earlier. Before I negotiated a temporary return, I had to make high-stakes decisions on my own. I improvised. I made mistakes, some of them embarrassing to recount. What emerges here, I hope, is an honest portrait of investigative reporting behind the scenes. Snowden is a complicated figure, far from the cartoon templates of hero or traitor. He can be fine company, funny and profane, an autodidact with a nimble mind and eclectic interests. He can also be stubborn, self-important, and a scold. Our relationship was fraught. He knew that I would not join his crusade, and he never relied on me to take his side as he did with Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald. We struggled over boundaries, mine as a journalist who wanted to know more, his as an advocate who saw his cause at stake in every choice of words. He broke ties with me, briefly, when I did not accept his conditions for my first story. The second time he withdrew, believing I had done him harm, we did not speak for months. "I'm not sure I'll ever be able to trust you to watch my back, but that's not why I talked to you," he told me when we resumed contact in the fall of 2013. "I trust you to report." Twice after that, I traveled to join him in Moscow for marathon conversations fueled by room service facsimiles of American fast food. He eats with an engineer's logic, ice cream first, because hamburgers don't melt. In New York and Princeton, he has beamed in for visits, inhabiting a remote-controlled robot that sees, hears, speaks, and rolls around the room. Occasionally, we visited on two-way video, across a surveillance-resistant channel built by trusted technical friends. Most often we rendezvoused in the securest precincts of his native habitat, holding live chats by keyboard over encrypted anonymous links. Those, done right, are the hardest to intercept. Personal questions, no matter how pertinent, were usually out of bounds. The first time I traveled to see him in Moscow, I tried to get him on record about his relationship with the Russian government. "You're living here," I said. "Do you accept money from the state? Are you questioned about your time in U.S. intelligence?" Snowden accused me of parroting his critics. He spoke in theoretical terms about what a person in his position might do. "You know I have no relationship with the Russian government," he burst out, finally. "You shouldn't engage in this line of questioning." "I don't know it. I don't know it until I ask you." "It's unknowable. You're asking me to say, prove there's no God." "No, I'm asking you to simply state that you've seen no burning bush." "And I am, in hypothetical terms." Hypothetical because the whole subject was off the record, until later when it was not. Even then, he declined to respond concretely. We had dozens of conversations like this, round and round, about dozens of subjects. For the record, I had no reason to believe that Snowden was a Russian asset, and no U.S. government official purported to possess evidence otherwise. Snowden dodged me with equal persistence when I asked about the genius-level IQ test result he obtained in elementary school, according to a family source. The listener is entitled to know up front that I think Snowden did substantially more good than harm, even though I am prepared to accept, as he is not, that his disclosures must have exacted a price in lost intelligence. Electronic surveillance is a tool of surpassing power and surprising fragility. Its value depends on catching targets unaware. A person of interest, forewarned, can change channels and disappear, at least for a while. Dread of lost coverage built a culture of deep silence at the NSA, which earned its nicknames of "No Such Agency" and "Never Say Anything." From an operational standpoint, comprehensive secrecy appeared to bring only advantage. But when the state of the art expanded surveillance into digital neighborhoods used by everyone, the NSA outran its political mandate. The boundary of secret intelligence in a free society had shifted. It needed debate. Some of Snowden's harshest critics, if only a few, are prepared to accept that this essential conversation would not have happened without him. I know the world changed as a result of Edward Snowden in a significant way, former FBI Director James B. Comey told me in a long and contemplative discussion of the leaks. and I can more easily measure the benefit.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?